Well, for those of you who joined late, we had a little bit of a glitch this morning, so we ended up having a shorter sit. And thank you again to everybody who persisted and hung in there. So we all know each other, and my name is Suze, and I'm this morning's local Dharma leader and giving a talk. And just to let everybody know that this is the Sunday in April that we're going to keep the Zoom open for an extra half hour. If anyone wants to stay for just social time or continue the Dharma conversation, whatever you would like, I'll leave the Zoom open and we can just hang out together. You can get a cup of coffee or tea or whatever. So this is the last week of the month on renunciation. Next month we move to wisdom. And I'm inviting you all on a journey. This journey has taken place over the last 5 weeks as I've practiced with and investigated what it means to renounce worry. I shared that with folks last week that I started this journey 5 weeks ago. And I did it as a result of a few things. First, I start every morning meditation with the five recollections about aging, illness, death, and loss, and that we are the heirs to our own actions, and it's the only ground we really have. And over time, these recollections have become really meaningful for me, and I notice as I recite them, a different one might stand out, really catch my attention. And lately, both the ones on aging and death have really stood out. My aging body has been speaking to me quite a lot and reminding me that I don't have the energy I used to have. I'm also forgetting more words, another sign of an aging mind. And the end of next month, I'm going to be celebrating my 80th birthday. And it's hard to even get my head around such a big number. And death is how I learned of the Dhamma. It was my very first retreat a few weeks after my sister died. And it's what has kind of kept me on the path for all of these years. The second thing that happened is in a sitting group that I'm in, a friend had recently come from a retreat with Ajahn Suchito, one of the teachers that we've been talking about a lot this whole month. And on the retreat, Ajahn Suchito said that as he, when he's getting close to dying, whether it's an hour away, a day, a week, a month, a year, or a decade, he doesn't want to meet his death with a grumbling mind and heart. And that really struck me. And then the third thing that happened was in the third week of March, I found myself feeling like this low rumble of worry mind was my constant companion. It seemed like everywhere I went, there was this worry rumble. And sometimes the rumble was really loud. So I think the five of us who run Sunday mornings, I think we've talked to you all about once a month we all get together and we talk about how we're going to approach the topic for the following month and what dates we're going to sign up for. So when that day came and all this stuff was coming together, I shared with my lovely colleagues that I was going to renounce worry. So I started a journal and kept notes on how worry was showing up for these 5 weeks. So this morning I'm going to share my journey with you all, some of the things I've learned, and both about the process of renunciation and what I think can be really helpful to us as we practice renunciation. And even though this is the last week that we will be talking about renunciation, I really hope that people continue with it, especially as we add some of the other paramis that are so helpful to this, like patience and truth and resolve. So I'm hopeful that this is going to be of benefit to others as I share my journey. So right away, I realized that worry is a mindset. And like all mindsets, it just arises and passes away. So what I claimed as what my renunciation process was going to be isn't really what it is, because I can't renounce worry. I don't have the power to control what mind state shows up and when. None of us do. So, and the worried mind state is such a familiar one for me, a kind of habitual response to challenging situations in my life. So I don't have control over whether it shows up, but I do have control over how I respond to it and how much I feed it. So I realized right away that what I was renouncing was my relationship to worry, and that what I wanted to do for these 5 weeks to really explore what that relationship is and what I might be able to let go of. One of the first things that happened for me when I realized that I didn't bring about the worry, that it wasn't, I didn't say, oh yeah, let's be worried right now, was that I actually relaxed more when the worry was around. I didn't like it, but there was something about just relaxing with, oh, this is just another mind state, that I actually had moments where I could just let it be. I'd be sitting or walking or just in my life, and I'd start feeling this worry rumble, and I could feel the resistance. But often, and it seemed the longer the weeks went by, there was more times when I would say, oh, okay, worry is present. I think I'm going to sit or walk or do the dishes or do whatever with worry for a while. And I could just really be there and just experience worry and not make it into a problem and not make it into something to worry about. Of course, I spent a lot of time going over the content of the worry. But mostly through these 5 weeks, I started holding it more lightly. And as I mentioned, I kept a daily journal, which was really helpful. And I came up with a lot of questions. One of the first things I did is I started looking at and asking myself, what does worry feel like in the body? And how can I just sit with these different body sensations? The sense of weighted, heavy feeling in the torso, or a sense of agitation in the mind that made it really difficult to sit. And then as I kept exploring and I got quiet enough, I noticed that there was this real sadness underneath it all. So I started asking myself a whole bunch of questions. So I'm going to share some of these questions, and some of them have answers and some not. So that question about what does the worry state of mind feel like? It was unsettled, bouncy, easily distractive, a bit scared, and definitely a bit grumbling. So remember how I was so struck by Ajahn Suchito saying he didn't want to meet his death being grumbly. I don't want to meet my life that way either. So then I asked, well, what am I getting out of worrying so much? The pretty obvious one is that in a deluded way, it makes me think, it fools me into thinking that I'm actually taking action on these problems and challenges, when in fact, all I'm doing is fretting and just stirring things up. Then the question, well, how do I feed this worry? One is when I tell myself the story of the content over and over and over again. As I tell this story, the issues seem so important that, of course, the mind says, you should worry about these because these are really big issues. Another way that I've been feeding the worry has to do with some just basic beliefs about myself and my abilities and my inabilities. And sometimes the worry strengthens those beliefs that I can't, that I'm not up to it. And it's like this relationship between the belief and the worry. The other way that I feed worry is, instead of just calling it an unpleasant feeling or thought, practicing with Vedana, the second foundation of mindfulness, I was practicing aversion, wanting to get rid of the unpleasant. Another set of questions had to do with how much worrying was reinforcing my sense of self. There's certainly those beliefs about myself and my abilities and whether I feel like I can handle stuff. And part of the issues that I'm dealing with is a retirement from a business that I've been running for many years. I'm so identified with being the owner of this property, having created all these shops, and that I can help start up blue-collar businesses, and I bake scones for my tenants, and there is so much me, capital M, capital E, in this business. And then there's so much me in the question of what is it going to be like when I retire? Another way that I've been looking at this is, what are some of my basic intentions about my life and practice? And does worry help nourish those intentions, or does it kind of send me on the wrong path? One of the most important intentions, which I've shared a lot on Sunday mornings, is to trust in the natural unfolding of life. It's my mantra that I came up with when my partner died suddenly 6+ years ago. So if I can trust in the natural unfolding of life, and if worry, this worry mind state, is part of that natural unfolding, what does it mean to trust it? And then what does it mean for me in terms of choices? That how do I respond to the things that come up naturally in life? My choice of, do I go with worry with an energy of getting rid of it, or do I go to worry with the energy of acceptance? Another really strong intention, as I mentioned, I came to the practice through death and dying. I don't want to be grumbling when I'm at my end. And so that's another really strong intention. Another set of questions was, what is the seductive nature of worry? Why is it such a draw? Of course, one of it is just habit. That, you know, here I am this many years old and I've been worrying a long time. It's how I respond to things. And in a funny, weird kind of way, it's so familiar that I think there's something comforting about even an afflictive mind state. I don't fully understand that one, and I'm going to just keep exploring it. And then there's this thing about that sadness that I discovered underneath all the agitation and stuff. I had shared with some people who I didn't really know very well that I was working on this renunciation process. And a couple of people came up to me and said, what are you doing? How can you do that? And this one young man asked me a question. I don't even know what his question was about, what something like, what was I getting out of this renunciation of worry? And my eyes filled with tears. And I realized that part of this is that I built this property and all of these tenant spaces with my partner of 35 years. And so now I'm going to be making all these changes all by myself. And so it kind of re-stimulated old grief. So this journey has been, the main thing that it has, when I think about a journey, it's kind of like a direction and it sends you somewhere. Well, here's where it sent me. It sent me right back to some of the basic elements of our practice. The first was anicca. All things are impermanent, they arise and they pass away. To be at peace with this truth brings great happiness. I think we've all probably shared that chant. So can I relate to worry as just a passing phenomenon and not a state of being? Anatta, worry was reinforcing the sense of self. All the content is about me. And what can I do about just having a lighter relationship to all this identification with my property and my business? The second foundation of mindfulness, Vedana. I don't know about others, but I've never had a very strong Vedana practice. You know, I know it's there, and I know, you know, I've gone on a gazillion retreats, and we're told to, you know, really practice with Vedana, notice the pleasant and unpleasant, and I think I skip over it a lot. So I think one of the things is this whole process is telling me is to stop skipping over it and to notice the unpleasant, be with it, but not go to aversion. So much of what we learned a couple years ago about dependent origination and about conditioning and that choice is available and that I really have gotten a chance to see what's involved in choosing how I respond to worry. And then, of course, the teaching on being in the moment and adding nothing to the moment. When I'm sitting and I'm truly just in this moment, a body, thought, sound, breath, worry isn't even there. You know, worry might come be part of a thought, but if I just am present with it, all I really have to do is watch what comes and goes. So there's some insights that I've gotten. And the first one is, of course, what I said is that you don't renounce worry. It's a mind state. We're talking about our relationship to these mind states. Another is that these mind states and the negative and unpleasant happen in a moment, moment by moment. Renunciation happens in a moment. Practice happens in each moment. And I don't have to feed whatever is coming in. One of the things I realized in these 5 weeks, you know, I told you how in March there was this constant rumble, and sometimes it was really loud. The longer I explored and investigated worry, there were many days worry was not even there. I was doing this, like, where's Waldo thing? It's like, where did it go? Where is this worry that was so loud, was so present? And it's kind of like what our teachers have been telling us for years, that when we sit with an object without clinging or pushing it away, the object passes on its own. A couple Mondays ago, Steve Wilhelm gave a talk on renunciation. He did this fabulous thing in it. He said that renunciation is both an intentional letting go and also an allowing, an acknowledging of how things just fall away. The first is willpower. It's that intention. I had to say, okay, Suze, you're going to do this. You're going to keep practicing. You're going to have it front and center. But the second was this natural falling away that happens when we realize that we don't need the object anymore. And so this is an ongoing inquiry for me. I'm going to keep asking myself, do I need worry? And then one of the other insights, and I don't know if it was Lauren or Lyndall who shared this story a couple weeks ago, but in one of Joseph Goldstein's talks, he talked about a retreat he was on where he was filled with fear. And he asked himself if the fear he was experiencing was going to be present for the rest of his life, could he be okay with that? So I asked myself the same kind of question. If worry, with even this loud rumble, was going to be present for the rest of my life, could I be okay with that? And the answer, which keeps on kind of showing up and going away and showing up, I think it comes, the answer is going to be found in the depth and sincerity of my practice. I think my thinking mind is going to go, no way. But I think my heart could be okay with it. I could imagine worrying some when my death is more imminent or when other losses are going to be, I'm going to be confronted with. But maybe that won't be a problem, and maybe it's just going to be moments of worry. So I'm going a little long. I just want to say a couple more things about when you're going to take on a renunciation practice with something hard, like an unsettled mind, what's going to help you? One thing that Tim said to me when I had an interview with him about this process, he said he reminded me that no matter what Dharma door you walk through, in this case for me it was worry, for you it might be something else, no matter what door you walk through, the entire Dharma is right there. And I just think that's really a beautiful thing to remember, that no matter where you go, where you start, if you're open to all that is present, the Dharma is going to be there to support you. Our daily mindfulness meditation is going to be the big thing that's going to help you no matter what, especially when your minds and bodies are agitated, practicing with calm, breathing in and out calm, reconnecting with your most heartfelt intentions. For me, Mary Oliver's poem, When Death Comes, says it all for me. I want to step through the door full of curiosity. And also, I want to live my life that way. She says these words as a bride married to amazement, or the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. Does worry help me do that? And the last thing, Ajahn Nisibo from Clear Mountain, I don't remember who he was quoting, but he quoted this teacher who said, "Everything I've let go of has claw marks all over it." In other words, renunciation ain't easy. This is serious practice. And I think Julie often reminds us in this Sangha about being kind to ourselves. And I think that's one of the real big things as we practice letting go. Remember that everything I've let go of has claw marks all over it. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for being here, for your patience this morning. And and thanks for letting me share my personal process these last 5 weeks. It's been rich, and I hope that you feel some of that richness, not so much of my content, but that doing this kind of serious exploration of something that you're wanting to let go of, how rich it can be for your practice. And so here we are. So I'm going to break us up into breakout groups. Let me just do this. We've got, I hope everybody can stay. Okay, Julie, bye. Thanks everybody for being here. So there's 14 of us. Well, 13. I'm going to make 5 groups. And the prompt is just, what have you been doing with your renunciation practice? How's it going? What are you learning? Share it with each other. Or if it hasn't been something, would you be open to starting one for yourself? And I'll bring us back in like 15 minutes. Okay, enjoy your group. Welcome back. People are joining. Hi, Judith. How you doing up there in Bellingham? Good?
Yeah, I didn't expect to be here, as I told you, but
yeah.
and then I had trouble getting in like everybody else, but my son and daughter-in-law are out with friends this morning.
Oh.
Hey.
Nice. Where do they live?
They live in Alameda.
Oh, okay.
California, and they're going back late this afternoon.
But, yeah. I'm glad you're getting a visit with them. That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay, here we are. Thanks, everybody, for hanging in there. And so we've got time to just share, and I realized not only didn't I read the morning statement, I didn't say anything about the guidelines for small groups, but you all are old timers at this. So anybody want to share anything about your own process with renunciation? We'd be happy to hear. I think you can all unmute. Yes, Judith, please.
I didn't hear all of your talk, but one thing we were talking about that has been really interesting to me because it's something very prevalent in my family is the magical thinking about worrying. Like if I worry, it will be okay. And if I neglect to worry, it will not work out, which of course we have lots of proof that that's not the case.
But we do it anyway. That's what I meant when I said I was deluding myself into thinking I was actually doing something.
Okay, so
I was worrying about it. It's just, thank you. That magical thinking, that's a helpful way of, that's a good definition of delusion, I think. Or what? I guess there are more.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. What have people been practicing with around renunciation, or if you're willing to share? And you, who, oh, Julie, you can, Julie,
hi there. Yeah, so I've been practicing with a couple things. I started with renouncing my addiction to the news. And that was really interesting because despite the fact that I sort of went without looking at my phone or anything else for about a week and a half and noticed some real benefits in terms of the energy I had for my practice. And I was like, you know, wow, this is great. Why didn't I do this before? And then the next thing you know, I'm sucked right back into it again. But I was really proud of myself that I didn't, you know, I didn't judge myself. I just paid attention to how it impacted me. And then I was sucked back in for a few more days. But the whole time I was like, oh, isn't it interesting how my attention, it just, you know, it just gets sucked into this thing. And then I kind of walked away from it again. And now I'm doing, you know, a whole 5 weeks into it, or actually less. I'm really not doing very much of it, but when I am, I'm noticing it. But I just wanted to mention briefly, Suze, another thing that I started paying a lot of attention to, which is I love to garden. And I had a lot of questions, kind of went through. I wasn't as disciplined as you to write it all down, but well, is there really anything wrong with gardening? Is it a bad thing? You know, but it was clearly a passion. And so I spent a lot of time exploring how it sucks my attention away. And, you know, I'm in the middle of a sit and I'm in a great space. And then all of a sudden something pops in my head. And boy, how much time just passed and I got all caught up in this thing. So for me, I really the whole process of even thinking about renunciation has put me a lot deeper into a lot deeper connection with just understanding how things influence my mind and my level of attention and mindfulness. Thanks.
That's such a fabulous description of what this process is. It really takes us in deeply, whatever it is that we're addicted to or conditioned to. If people haven't listened to Carrie Peterson's talk from earlier in the month, she talks about renunciation, renouncing what we're addicted to. And it's a really good talk. I think I found it really helpful. Thanks, Julie, for sharing that. And also the thing you said about certain things that we have passions about, and the line between passion and obsession. And, you know, what's the quality of our energy? And are we bringing mindfulness to our passions, and what happens with that? And you know, having passions and things that really feed us are so lovely in life. It's part of what makes life so wonderful. But then how to, again, our relationship to it. Yeah. I'm glad it's being rich for you. That's great. Anyone else? Rosie, just unmute. You have to unmute first. Okay. There you go.
You know, Suze, but I just found out that I have to leave my home of 21 years and that I rent, but it's very much become my home and then my neighborhood and everything. My landlady is selling the house. And I having a terrible time with it, getting lots of support. But in fact, my son, who was so upset about it, he offered to buy the house.
So what is your practice telling you to do?
I was, you know, in our group, Lauren said that she quoted Thich Nhat Hanh and said, "Everywhere is home." I love
Wow.
That's my new mom.
Lovely. Huh? So finding a new home. Yeah. Yeah. May that be so for you, Rosie. That would be lovely.
You make a big difference, Suze.
Oh, thanks, honey. Back at you. And Nana, do you want to introduce your lovely companion there?
Yes.
Hi, what's your name? Everybody wants to know.
My name is Dabney.
Hi, welcome to our group. It's so nice seeing you.
What do you say?
Thank you.
Yes. Do you know what we're doing here? We're talking about the Buddha. What do you want to say about the Buddha to everybody? Look at the screen. Say something quick. What's your message? Don't be shy. What?
You know what? It's not easy to talk in front of all these people.
It's not.
So we're happy to just see your face. Thank you. Thanks for being there with your dad.
I'll say something quick about renunciation. It's not limited to this month. I would say that I've gone through some pivotal shifts in my life. And part of that required me, in my reflections, to let go of a lot of people, places, and things. Mm-hmm. And these are people, places, and things that were pillars in my life.
Wow.
And so releasing those attachments, wife, parents, siblings, I share this in the group, etc., etc. But it also means that I've renounced, and I'm in the process of renouncing one or two bad habits, but I've renounced a lot of bad habits. But anyway, that's just what I wanted to share.
Whew, some big, I mean, we do renounce, we renounce things all along a continuum of small, what might feel to us smaller things and things that are really big. And the whole thing about habits, wow, it's just powerful. The habits that we have of mind and of action. And renunciation is about renouncing action. So it's how we respond, you know, and actually act out those. Thanks, Nana. Anyone else want to share anything? Yes, please, Lillian. Hi.
One thing I've been practicing with is saving the best for last, which is kind of like my mantra just with like eating or like some book I'm going to read or like anything. It's like I want the good thing to come at the end, like the end of the weekend. I want there to be this like really fun thing I do to like culminate the weekend. But it feels like a not true way to live. And so I've been trying to challenge that a little bit, but it's pretty pervasive. So.
Yeah, I think there would probably be many of us who could identify with that. And one of the things about those like little mantra things that we do for ourselves is to explore like what's beneath that. You know, is what's the desire that is feeding that? And where does it, well, how does it serve you and how does it not serve you? Because, you know, our habits aren't all bad. You know, we have a lot of really good ones too. And some of them are mixed. So I think it's just such rich territory. So thanks. Anyone else? Got another minute before I do just a couple little announcements and close with a dedication of merit. I have to say that I feel very different here at 11:25 than I did at 10 o'clock when nobody could get in. And it was, and Ken wasn't answering his phone and it was just such a panic. So it really helped sitting together and remembering that we just have to, how do we deal with agitation? What does our practice offer to us? I mean, it's not as if the agitation goes away, but even in that sit, it was like, oh, right, disappointment and a little bit of concern and then, you know, a lot of identity. I wanted to give my talk and what if nobody's there and then what is that about, you know? But it doesn't have to become a source of suffering. And I think that's what we're all doing is figuring out how do we relate to our mind so that what we do there doesn't become a source of suffering, but helps us lead away from suffering towards the freedom that the Dharma is just right there offering. And I know we say this a lot Sunday mornings, but we're also grateful for the practice that we're less crazy than we would be otherwise. So thanks again. So let's just take a quiet moment and appreciate ourselves for coming here this morning to practice Dhamma together, to sit in Sangha. Appreciate the sincerity and depth of commitment that we all have. Sometimes it's just moment to moment. Sometimes it's not a solid straight line, but we keep coming back, and that's so beautiful. I'm going to share this latest metta phrase that I've been using. May we all be at ease with whatever shows up and with whatever goes away. And may that ease be shared with all of those in your families and communities and with beings everywhere.